Good morning. It's another wonderful Monday morning here in Tucson. We are in the KVOI 1030 The Voice studios, and it is Monday, October 6th. And, you know, Matt, that was a great compilation of so many things that have been going on around. Some really challenging updates there. I think bus riding is becoming a little bit dangerous for a lot of people, and that is so sad. But how wonderful that there are folks that helped that gentleman survive.
Yep. Good Samaritans, thankful for that.
Many of them out there, for sure. Sure. Yeah. It was a jam-packed weekend, I know, the first weekend of October, and a whole lot of things were going on all over our community and all over the state. I know that you got out and about to several of them, and you were at a football game.
I was.
KVOI
1030 The Voice and our sister stations Poderosa Groove and Urbana were there at the tailgate with celebrating Hispanic heritage, and we got to hear from a band called The Johns and another band that I've known and loved for years, Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. So it was a lot of fun pregame before the Cats went out and whooped up on the team that they played.
Yay!
All of a sudden.
It's a blank for me as well. Well, Saturday evening, some of us from the Morning Voice, Dr. Ed Ackerley and myself, were out at another celebration going on at Rialto Theater. So we were in the historic theater downtown, and we were helping raise attention and support for one of our fellow community organizations, Intermountain Centers for Human Development. Mr. Roy Sparks, who's been on our show in the past and Director of Marketing and Development, was there, and the whole show had a yacht rock theme for those folks who have really picked up on that. And the performing band is a group called Catalina Wine Mixers, and there were a lot of folks out looking for the wine, buying it at the bar, and listening to some great tunes. And it was open for all ages, so we saw kids in there and retirees in there and everybody in between. Lots of fun and brought a lot of attention. People were buying their yacht hats, and even some folks came dressed up in pirate garb.
Aye, aye.
Yeah, they were doing the whole thing with the parrots, and it was a lot of fun. So thanks again to our friends at Intermountain. They're going to be back on our show probably later this month telling us a little bit about how that gig did. So for our listeners who hear us regularly, they know that we bring attention here on Rainmakers and bring voice to community organizations, but also individuals, leaders, and even small businesses that are making a difference in helping our Southern Arizonans thrive. And this morning, I'm so excited that we have in studio, kicking off another great show, we have Charlie Buchanan, the CEO of Habitat for Humanity, Tucson, Southern Arizona. Charlie, welcome. Thanks for being here with us this morning.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate your interest in our work and shining a light on our mission.
Well, it's wonderful, and we are here not only to hear about what's going on with Habitat here in Tucson and all across the Southern Arizona region, but today is World Habitat Day, and it happens to fall on a Monday, which we're very excited every year. I think World Habitat Day is always recognized the first Monday of October. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. The United Nations celebrates it globally, and it's really a day of reflection to bring attention to the right for everyone to have adequate shelter. And certainly at Habitat, that really aligns with our local mission, and we also champion and cheerlead that global vision as well.
Wonderful. Well, you do great work. Your organization's been doing great work for a long time. You have a wonderful history of working with several community organizations. I know your background. A lot of people remember you even from your YMCA days.
That's right.
And so, Matt, that transition over into Habitat for Humanity happened years ago, and you were focusing on the operations and the team and all that, and then had an opportunity to ascend about 3 years ago now. Has it been that long?
Just a little bit, 3.5 years, but who's counting,
yeah,
right?
Goes by in a blur, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, during your tenure, during your term, there have been many exciting things that have happened. Well, first of all, you ascended right after COVID. It was just post-pandemic years.
Right.
And so much going on that maybe prevented a little bit of momentum in building or some of those things, but certainly did not stop the need of the mission. And now, in these recent years, we've seen the issue of housing whether it's affordability, accessibility, people needing to transition from one location to another, all kinds of issues are affecting whether people have a home and whether they are housed. You and your team do a fabulous job of really bringing attention to the many different facets of this needs. Also in your tenure, launched the Check Center, which is fabulous and does a lot, not only in the preparation of materials for homes to build, as I understand it, and as I've seen on several tours with you, but I love when you get to start talking about sort of the mission behind the mission, and that is to teach others, to help people literally learn how to build a home and the various industries and career paths that they could take along that. They get a lot of training doing that and get to meet other people in the business.
And you're exactly right. You know, COVID taught us a lot of things, but I think one of the most glaring outcomes of that was the importance of home. And everybody understood that you need a safe place to be safe, to heal when you're sick and rest and get better, and protect your family and build your future. And so demand from that point forward really accelerated in the housing market and aggravated what was already a very severe housing crisis and made it even more glaring. And so we did have the opportunity to kind of dig deep at Habitat and say, maybe what we've done in the past isn't going to suit the present and future needs. And so how can we be better tomorrow than we are today? And the Check Center was a big solution for that. So we do prefabricate exterior wall panels. We've been able to build more homes, build them faster, and also do that through student engagement, because we know that the lack of skilled workers in the construction industry really is a barrier to more housing.
Yeah, because if you don't have people able or and trained and certified to whatever extent they need to be, and having the experience, they, then it's just a much slower process. What's exciting, I think, for some families is when they get the opportunity and the volunteers who may not be in the construction industry, who may not come with that knowledge and training, but they get to help participate. In fact, it's required that they participate in the actual building of their homes. But as you mentioned, that's a bit slower process than trying to get solid, well-built, sturdy homes available for people who need to rent, buy, or otherwise be in them. And these days, I think Habitat provides a whole lot of options for folks who need to get into homes. So it's not simply a one-by-one house building, but you try and do this in groups and numbers in different geographical areas so that many activities can be happening at the same time. Is that a does that present, though, a challenge because there's only so much money and so much land to acquire? Or how does all that work?
Sure. There are some limitations and constraints, as you mentioned, land being one. Land mostly is undeveloped. So what historically we've been able to build on small infill developed lots, that is different now. We're really not only builders, but we're developers. And we're building small scale development, small infill subdivisions of 20, 30 homes, just because that's what's available in the market. So it certainly changes the complexity. And as we look to build more and serve more, volunteer engagement is critical. And so we had just over 3,000 volunteers give 62,000 hours in the last year.
Wow.
And what's really cool
and
is...
that's just here locally in the greater Pima or all of Southern Arizona area?
Yeah, absolutely. And 8,000 of those hours were given by future home buyers. And so that's really a testament to their resiliency and how hard they work for a better future.
Right, right. I have to say, I've it's been years ago in another community where I volunteered a little bit on a Habitat build, but I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet here in Tucson. But it's so impressive when people of all walks of life come together and pick up a hammer or learn how to cut the wood or learn how to do a whole number of things. I mean, just so many facets to home building and the phases. And it's just got to be so exciting when you see those homes start to come to fruition and the families get excited about what will be their place.
It really is a reflection of the power of partnership and what we can achieve when we work together. And at a Habitat build site, only prerequisite is willingness. And every swing of the hammer is really an expression that you care. And that's the beauty of Habitat, is we stand on common ground, we show the power of partnership, and we make really exciting things happen locally in our community.
That's fabulous. Well, you talked about collaboration being the key and something that we learned. Well, we learn in various phases of things when the economy's up or down. When, you know, when it's down, there's more need. When it's up, people have more freedom or flexibility than perhaps to also give. So there's always something going on by the way of partnership and collaboration. How does that transfer over into a big world vision? So World Habitat Day, you mentioned that United Nations is a big part of this and really takes part in giving the recognition of their strategies. And some people, and you know, I didn't bring it. I have that wonderful pin that I received on one of my visits to the UN that is round and talks about the 17 strategies of the world that help make the world a better place for everybody, and collaboration certainly in their education, health, all kinds of different strategic priorities, actually is what it's called. I know that the 2025 theme of World Habitat Day is urban crisis response. And that's a little bit different than the needs we see out here in southern Arizona, because we have so many agricultural and rural and borderlands communities, as well as our urban area here in the greater Tucson area. How do we look at, or how do you, wearing your hat, leading such an important region, kind of come together with this world focus? I mean, it sort of seems daunting, almost like what can everybody do? But what kind of conversations are going on between you and your counterparts?
Well, I know when I first became CEO, I really leaned into collectively understanding that we can do far more than we can individually. Mm-hmm. So working with other nonprofit providers, the city, the county, we all share in this ability and responsibility to provide better outcomes for families. And so, you know, when you mention urban development, at the core, really, it's a housing affordability issue. And that's the core issue around the unhoused. And we know that if we can expand supply, we advocate for better policies that really support housing development and streamline the development process, improve density and zoning barriers that really inhibit not only developers like Habitat, but there needs to be other partners. It's going to take all of us to really make an impact at a meaningful scale and really respond to the current crisis. And so,
well, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you say we have to come together, because to come up with sustainable solutions, not just one-hit wonders that then go away, but what can we do to sustain and evolve regardless of what's happening? Right now we're in the middle of a federal government shutdown. That's probably impeding a whole lot of things, so we certainly don't have time to list all of that. But at the same time, when these strategic alliances are strengthened, and when they exist, first of all, and then when they are strengthened, these other upsets then have less impact. There's still an impact, but hopefully a lesser impact, because there is strength in the coalition that's been built. I know firsthand of you welcoming other leaders, private, nonprofit, public sector leaders, to come and understand more about the Chuck Center and its possibilities, and to talk. Now that the Chuck Center has been going on, you talked about the prefabrication of the panels, and probably those, I'm going to guess, are set to a certain scalable, certain housing size, so that you can go on with your main mission. But I would imagine that as new opportunities come up with other organizations, that maybe there might be an exploration of different sizes or different opportunities to build to different specificities. Is that something on the horizon?
Yeah, you're selling our hope for the future.
Yay.
You know, that really has been where we've leaned in, and absolutely, we prefabricate 13 unique wall elements, and they can be really used on any iteration of housing as long as you start with design. And so from a modest pace, Habitat Tucson can produce enough panels for far beyond our own consumption at this time, which we're building and proud of 20 homes a year. But the Chuck Center can really produce panels for up to 100 homes a year.
Oh, so that's fabulous.
It invites opportunity for us to engage with other providers that serve the unhoused population or transitional or even affordable rental that we can provide, help them along in their mission that's really meaningful as well.
Well, we are about to go to a break, but on that note, as we bridge into this little break, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about transitional housing. We've got some other colleagues and great community organizations that come visit us on The Morning Voice and on Rainmakers frequently. And so stay tuned, listeners. We'll be back with Charlie Buchanan, CEO of Habitat for Humanity Tucson in Southern Arizona. Love that. Earth, Wind, and Fire as we come back in on a Monday morning. This is Monday, October 6th, in fact. And if it's the first Monday, then it has to be World Habitat Day. And in studio with us today is CEO of Habitat for Humanity, Tucson, Southern Arizona, Charlie Buchanan. Charlie, thanks for being with us this morning here at the Rainmakers.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
We're excited. We're learning a little bit more in our conversation about World Habitat Day and the theme for 2025, which is Urban Crisis Response. And right before we went to break, you were talking about collaboration and that being the key to us finding these sustainable solutions, scalable solutions, and addressing the needs, all the needs that go into having a home. Lots of different pieces and parts that go into that. And the role that you and your team play, not only in raising funds, raising attention, and then raising participation with building the homes, and meaning the volunteer teams and different folks that can come out and give of their time and their energy, but also that the Chuck Center here in the Tucson area, actually technically I think it's Marana, right? I'm not sure. Is it right?
It's
right
Pima
on the border.
County unincorporated.
It's Pima County unincorporated is where the Chuck Center sits, and not too far off the freeway.
It's close.
Where prefab panels for homes are built. And so not only is that happening, but it also involves students from Pima Community College and other folks who may have an opportunity to get involved in that process as well. So you're building skills in the industry besides.
Inspiring careers in the trades. It's a great environment at Habitat Tucson to really engage both young and old minds in what a career in the trades might look like and give them the hands-on experience, as well as the credentialing. We offer micro-credentialing through NCCER, National Construction Education Curriculum. So
Great. It's
been exciting to roll out.
That's wonderful. And other organizations are taking heed of the role not only that you play in the community, but looking at opportunities to collaborate here and there. We have some great friends over at Compass Affordable Housing, Carolyn Gorst, Director of Development, as well as new CEO Tony Sims have been on the show. Get involved in community, I think recently had a tour out of Chuck Center to understand a little bit more of the latest. And they bring, what I really enjoy with Compass and some of the other organizations, especially groups like Community Foundation of Southern Arizona, who bring these kind of settings together so that people can have collaborative brainstorming, if you will, to see what else could everybody be doing. And that might be, again, everything from donations or putting volunteer groups together. But it seems like maybe thinking strategically about what's to come, what's on the horizon for home building, and which players might come together to kind of tackle some of those solutions. I wonder if there are ideas or if you had a wish list of what Habitat could do for community. Is it financial? Is it maybe new creativity in the way that we build houses, you know, innovations and things like that? Or what would you say?
That's a key word, and absolutely where we've lived the last few years is innovation and kind of unpacking everything we've done historically to try and build more faster. And we've been able to achieve that for our own use, but I think there's capacity for us to do it also collaboratively with others. Mm-hmm. And I think our hope is that somehow this asset at the Chuck Center can really be a community asset and support real meaningful missions. And we've had conversations as there's been topics of micro villages for the unhoused or with other nonprofit developers that might be pursuing tiny homes or casitas and accessory dwelling units, which we know can really help the housing supply.
Yep.
But there's so many barriers to get there. And so if the Chuck Center can play a part in that, that would be a big win for us.
Thank you for being so willing to do that. But I think you hit on an interesting part. There are many barriers to entry here, barriers to the success. Some of those being policy. I'm going to guess things that maybe the county or the city or the state could get involved in, legislators, or even local city officials, maybe to tackle some of that. But it all comes from people being informed and then raising their voice, saying how not only is this possible, but then how do we get to there? If it's not, if there is a barrier, you know, what do we need to do to overcome that? I'm going to guess that many of those things simply have to do with understanding and getting agreement that it would be okay to do something like that, zoning or maybe a price point or a tax point. But all of that takes community being informed.
Absolutely. And there are some real vital topics occurring within the community around the missing middle and housing that supports that, and how we can improve the development pipeline and process, and what zoning restrictions are really a barrier to housing, and the parking requirements and the setbacks, and how can we have more dense development. You know, once you engage in those conversations, not only do you break down the systems and the bureaucracy behind it, but you also have the community that needs to understand why it matters and is important. And not in my backyard can sometimes be a very real barrier for development of affordable housing.
That's true. I think we've seen that in a number of issues when there are solutions at play and people are not necessarily against, or they say they're not against it, but they just don't want it right next to them, and we have to overcome the whys. You know, why is it that that would be such a terrible thing to have a great solution right next to you? So those are real challenges. I think we're getting ready for our next commercial break here. I hear the music coming on. So folks, stay tuned. We've got CEO Charlie Buchanan from Habitat for Humanity, and you're listening to Rainmaker. And we're back this morning on Rainmakers, Monday, October 6th. We've had in studio CEO Charlie Buchanan from Habitat for Humanity of Tucson and Southern Arizona. Charlie, thanks so much for telling us and our listeners a little bit more about what's going on at Habitat for Humanity here locally, but also World Habitat Day, which started back in 1985. I think the United Nations designated the first Monday of October every year to be World Habitat Day, and attention to a lot of the issues around housing, about providing homes, about building homes, and everything that goes therein. Sounds like you are on top of that as well with your team and your board and all of your volunteers, not only in your day-to-day of processing folks, but and the applications and working with the families that might receive the homes, but also the kind of work that you're doing to help positively impact the housing supply. And that's by building panels and prefabbed pieces and parts for housing so that the houses can come to fruition a little bit sooner, and maybe doing that with other organizations. Sounds like that's on the horizon too.
Absolutely. Yeah, we adopted a new strategic plan. We're on year two of that, and it's really answering a call to hope. And that's how we view all of our activity here at Habitat Tucson, is how can we answer the call for hope and create more opportunity and systems of empowerment in our community for people to live real bright lives.
That's wonderful. And I know that you have a campaign on your website or a slogan, Give the Gift of Home, which again can mean so many things. Get involved, volunteer time, come out and build a home, encourage others to come to your team, to your organization, to your location, and learn more about how they can either get involved or maybe benefit from signing up and applying to receive a home. And there is an application process, correct? I mean, there's a whole process of how folks get selected.
There is. We do information sessions, and they're actually right on the horizon here for the next cohort of home buyers. So good opportunity to check in with Habitat Tucson. And it starts with an information session and then proceeds to application.
Wonderful. And your website that people can find more information is?
HabitatTucson.org.
Wonderful. We want people to go there to learn more about what you're doing, find out how to get involved, find out if they might qualify. And the best way to do that is sign up for one of the information sessions and learn more. But also, if folks are wanting to give, not only of their time and talent, but of their treasure. There are hot buttons on your website. They can find different ways to donate, but they also can go to the store on Grant and by virtue of their purchases gives to Habitat. Tell folks a little bit more about that store.
Yeah, so a lot of ways to support our work, and the Habby store has been real critical part of our mission, and on net income generates about enough to build 6 to 8 houses for us annually. And so
that's
we say at the Habby store, every sale bangs a nail. And so shoppers
that's
can
great.
Support the store. 90% of what we sell in the store is donated from our community. It's just another reflection of how people have wrapped their arms around our mission at Habitat Tucson for a long time.
That's wonderful. Well, listeners, thanks so much for listening. We've had CEO Charlie Buchanan on this morning on Monday, October 6th, World Habitat Day, and I'm going to say Southern Arizona Habitat Day. Lots going on. Please keep in touch and if you have questions and somehow forgot how to get in touch with Charlie over at HabitatTucson.org, and you don't remember that, please call us at the station, you know, here at 10:30, The Voice, and on The Morning Voice, you can always give us a call about any of our shows and guests. We're at 520-790-2040. And Matt Neely behind the glass will also take your call if you have a question any of the rest of this show. Charlie's going to be leaving us in a couple minutes, and we've got our next guest coming on. Matt, I think you just welcomed them into our lobby.
Indeed.
Is that
the
Adriana
Angels
and Carla?
Are here and ready.
Pardon me?
The Angels are here and ready.
Fantastic. So stay tuned. We're going to have next Adriana.
And we got Charlie and we got Angels.
There you
saying.
Go. Charlie.
It's destiny.
Charlie and the Angels. Not quite Charlie's Angels, but maybe so. That's great. So Adriana Rincon and Carla Luby are going to be on next. They are with Angel Charity for Children, serving on their board and also focusing on Halos for Hire. So there is an awful lot of synergy, I think, that goes on with these organizations. Charlie, thanks again for being here, and we hope that you'll come back and tell us more.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. So we are definitely not holding it back. Thank you for that happy song. It always puts me in a good mood, Matt Neely. Appreciate you behind the glass keeping us happy. This is Monday, October 6th. We are on Rainmakers, The Morning Voice. If it's a Monday, it's Rainmakers, and we always have fabulous guests who are making great things happen in Southern Arizona and helping families and businesses thrive. You just heard in our first segment, if you were listening, you had a chance to hear a little bit from Charlie Buchanan, who is CEO of Habitat for Humanity in Tucson and Southern Arizona. And now we have two more fabulous guests, Adriana Rincon and also Carla Luby, who are here on behalf of Angel Charity for Children, and this morning are going to be talking about Halos for Hire. Welcome, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us here.
It's so exciting to have you both on. And Carla, I believe you are chair-elect for 2026.
Yes, I am.
Congratulations, and that's so exciting. It means you've been involved a lot because you don't just all of a sudden appear to be chair. So you've been putting in your dues, your time, your talent, your treasures, making Angel Charities come to life. And Adriana, we have you listed as Charity Selection Chair.
That's correct.
So that's one of the committees that helps make some of these programs possible.
Correct.
How about, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with Angel Charity for Children, I always want to say Angel Charities. It's Angel Charity for Children. Want to get it right. Talk a little bit just about how the organization works, what it does, because your name is might be ubiquitous to some, but might be unfamiliar to others.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Angel Charity for Children is a nonprofit organization here in town with approximately 250 volunteer members.
Wow.
A cross-section of the Tucson community.
Mm-hmm.
And our mission is simple. It's to improve the quality of life for children in Pima County.
Isn't that fabulous? Lots of ways to do that. Here on our show, we've had many different leaders and organizations come on who are focused on children. Some of them are statewide advocacy type of organizations like the Children's Action Alliance. Also, we've had Arizona Friends of Foster Children and many other folks that are focused on children's needs and children's issues. It seems to me, if I understand correctly, that Angel Charity for Children finds ways through their volunteering and through funding, through money, to help other orgs who are helping children and help help them as a benefactor to those organizations.
Yes, you've got it right.
And is that what Halos for Hire is all about?
So Halo for Hire is specifically the committee that chooses or vets the applications that we're considering funding for 2026.
Isn't that awesome?
Yes. So on Tuesday, October 14th, we're hosting our Halo for Hire, where nonprofits can come and find out about our grant application process.
Oh, that's so exciting, because not only do they get to learn, if they didn't know, then they get to understand that there's money on the table, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But really, those information sessions are so important, because every organization has its own process, might have different eligibility criteria, or just might be a little bit daunting right now for nonprofits who are being inundated with how do we go after money, since right now probably most of them are losing or have lost or are in fear of losing some of their government funding. So they need to make sure they're understanding the other opportunities that are out there. And you all have been in action for decades helping children.
Yes, this is our 43rd year.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, so we have year after year partnered with these incredible agencies that are doing the work, and we are fundraising on their behalf. And so, as you said, with the potential loss of funding for a lot of these agencies, we want them to know that we are here, we're going to continue fundraising, because we want them to be able to continue doing the work that they're doing, and we'll take some of that burden off so they can focus on the children.
What a relief. What a relief. So selection, vetting the organization, so you're having a session on Tuesday, October 14th. Let's remind our listeners and our viewers
Absolutely.
Who might be watching, because we live stream on Facebook and YouTube as well. They can go where to sign up?
So they can go to angelcharity.com, and under funding, they can sign up to register for the Halo for Hire session.
And that's going to be virtual session or
live? We'd love for them to be in present.
Okay.
But we do have a Zoom option if they cannot be present. But I think being present there will give us the opportunity to give them all the information.
I think, I have to agree with you that anytime there's an opportunity to be, just like here in
Absolutely.
Our studio, folks can call in. Sometimes we have people call in for their interviews, but anytime someone can be live in front of us, it just seems that the energy connects a little bit more.
We can vibe.
Yes, we can vibe. And when people are learning, that's so important. When they have questions and maybe they're hesitant to ask, or they don't want to do it, they don't necessarily want to interrupt a Zoom, or it's just a behavior thing where they say, well, I'll call later with a question. Well, if they're in person, maybe they can actually talk to their neighbor or come up to somebody during a break or right after, and be able to get some more questions answered and be a little more certain about their opportunities.
Right.
Yes, and oftentimes if one agency has a question, it's a question that other people have on their mind as well. So being there in person, hearing some of the other conversations happening, keeps everybody informed.
I love the concept of Halo for Hire. Because it seems that you all are filling a need of that expertise, as you mentioned, that it helps relieve a little bit of a burden for nonprofits, even if they do have the most fabulous development and resource development and grant writing folks on their team. It just may be that they're overburdened. They don't have time to learn yet one more opportunity, or maybe the due dates are overwhelming for them, whatever the case may be. But if they have an opportunity to figure out how to apply, how to submit requests, and then you're able to kind of go chase that money for them.
I like to say Angel Charity dates exclusively for 1 year. And we're raising money for that one, perhaps two nonprofits. We work really hard on behalf of that nonprofit here.
How wonderful is that?
So once they're selected, we're in it. We're on it all the way.
And you're in it to win it, as they say.
We're going to get them to the goal line.
That's wonderful. And again, so much shift happening in community organizations. And some folks, just regular churn. They're retiring, maybe they're moving, and nonprofits are having this shift in staffing or leadership or whatever the case may be. So for all of you community organizations, I think the only, the starting point to be eligible is that the organization is here in Southern Arizona or in Tucson proper?
So it's a 501c3 mm-hmm. for 3 years.
Okay.
And the project that they are applying on behalf of benefits children.
Okay.
In Pima County.
In Pima County.
In Pima County. So it's countywide.
Correct.
Wonderful. That just opens up the doors for so many folks, especially in some of the unincorporated areas,
absolutely,
you know, Vail or also just outside of the city of Tucson. So Sahuarita, I'm thinking Ajo, I'm thinking Vail and even up north, Catalina and Oro Valley and all those places. So that's great. So much to be done. Nonprofits need more help more than ever these days.
More than ever, that's true.
And so this is a place that they can get involved. So angelcharity.com is where they can go and learn a little bit more and register for Tuesday, October 14th for the information session.
Is it .org? I apologize.
I think both will get you there.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good to know.
Both,
you know, that's really smart because I remember the days where the .org
made a difference.
Suffix, yes, there made a difference about whether you could even get to your organization. And nowadays, people can kind of buy them up, register them up.
We want nonprofits to find us.
That's good. That's good. Now, if folks want to volunteer or want to become involved in some of your committees or any of those kinds of things, should they also go there? And is there a place for them to learn more?
Yes. On our website, there is a section called How to Help.
Okay.
And we're always looking to partner with the community, whether it's for one of our really fun events throughout the year or upcoming Angel Ball, or if somebody wants to become a member, they can inquire there as well.
Wonderful. And speaking of Angel Ball, one of the most fabulous balls, sparkly and fun and celebratory. Tell us when that's coming up.
So that'll be December 13th.
Wow.
It's always the second Saturday in December. Mm-hmm. And we're once again at the fabulous La Paloma Resort and Spa. And it's, I think the theme this year is It's a Wonderful World.
Wonderful. That is a fabulous event. People get dressed up to the nines. They get to visit with each other and celebrate the kind of successes that this type of support has had for Pima County. I think, if I remember correctly, also some of the kids that have been receivers of the positive impact are featured or maybe on video or maybe even in attendance. Do we see the kids there?
You know, I know that in the past we have had, I remember specifically volunteers from Tucson Village Farm, mm-hmm, that help us in the casino gift area. And I think there are always highlights, videos of the projects and the beneficiaries that we've been partnering with throughout the year.
The ball is intended to be a thank you to our donors.
Wonderful.
So it's an adult event. It's an adult event, and it's definitely a celebration to thank them once again to partnering with Angel Charity on behalf of whatever organization we're fundraising for. So that day really is a fun event of just, we did it. We did it again, and then we get rested, and we jump right back in and then start the clock again and start the timer. Here we go again.
Here we go again for another wonderful year. Well, again, I think that Halo for Hire is going to have is a well-needed support for organizations who are out there really, really doing God's work. You know, it takes a village, as they say, and this is another part of supporting the village that is helping the others and finding a little bit of opportunity to give them some technical relief, some expertise in an area that maybe they just need a little more push in for a year or two or three.
Well, and the wonderful thing about the process is we've been doing it for 43 years. And I think unlike most grant processes where you just submit an application and you wait around to find out, the partnership starts early. So once we've narrowed down to about 20 agencies, our committee members will partner and be liaisons for Angel, working with these nonprofit agencies to help build their application and build their presentations so that we have a complete picture of what their request really is. So it's a very unique process.
Wonderful. It's so, like I said, so needed. Sometimes it just gives that extra boost of confidence and clarity so that applications can be can really be telling the story that the organization is wanting to represent.
Carla, why don't you tell Lydia about the amounts that we're going to be fundraising
yes.
this year? Because I think that's something the local nonprofits would love to hear.
Yes.
Yep. So we have grants in two different categories. We have our opportunity grants, mm-hmm. which are raising... which are from between $10,000 and $75,000. And those get funded right away in May.
Oh.
So May 2026, those agencies will be receiving a check so that they can put that money to work right away.
That's fantastic.
And then we have our impact grants, which requests range between $100,000 and $900,000. And those are those agencies that we are really partnering with to make that long-term commitment with for the year to fundraise for.
And do those come in one chunk or does that get spread out over a few years?
We commit to fundraising for them in all of 2026, so they will receive their check in 2027.
Okay.
Once we've met our goal. Unlike the opportunity grants that will receive their checks in May of 2026.
That's great. But well, either one of those, I mean, nobody's going to say no to that amount of money.
Well, what's interesting is that we have the opportunity grant recipients. We consider them smaller grants.
Sure.
Yet these nonprofits say that it has been changing courses for their work.
Oh, sure.
What we consider small makes quite an impact for them. So we should just feel good all around it.
Mm-hmm. Well, 10 to 75K can make a difference in paying for an intern, a part-time person, staff member. It could be investing in some more equipment or maybe helping launch a program or two by dividing that up. So
absolutely,
that can really go a long way. But yes, it is smaller for the likes of all of you and the kind of money that you raise makes a difference. But there is room for all of that. You know, it all spends well, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. And so we want to see all of those agencies and hear about all of those projects. So we really encourage nonprofit agencies to attend our Halo for Hire seminar in October and reach out, ask questions. Adriana can be reached at charityselection@angelcharity.org. So they can email if they have any specific questions, but we'd love to see lots of RSVPs. We want a full house.
Great. Well, we will help spread the word here at Rainmakers. And also we'd love to have you back later, between now and the ball or maybe even after the ball to hear how everything went, how the sessions went, people that are getting their applications
would love to
in
come back
and have you here on a regular basis. So ladies, thank you for all that you are making happen in our community. You definitely are Rainmakers. Angel Charities has been doing great things. Matt Neely is doing cartwheels and really, really championing over there.
Absolutely.
I know, Matt, that this is one of your favorite organizations. You have family ties here,
Go Kelly. The Angels do a lot of great work in Tucson, and they've been doing it for a long time, and it's just the energy and the support of the community.
We appreciate
amazing.
Matt. He's been a longtime supporter.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Very engaged. And again, this morning on Rainmakers, you've been listening to Carla Luby, Chair, am I pronouncing that correctly?
You are,
yes.
Yes.
Good. Chair Elect for 2026, so congratulations, and Adriana Rincon, Charity Selection Chair over at Angel Charities. And let's remember to go online, register for Tuesday, October 14th, Halos for Hire information session to learn more about how your organization can get involved.
AngelCharity.org.
.org. There you go. We have it confirmed. So AngelCharity.org to learn more, find out more, RSVP, and also donate.
Thank you so much, Lydia.
Have a wonderful day. Thanks again. It's Monday, October 6th. We are with Rainmakers on The Morning Voice here at KVOI. Please stay tuned for our next guest. We will be having in next the Gospel Rescue Mission, so stay tuned. We are back for our second hour, Monday, October 6th, here on Rainmakers. If it's a Monday, we are Rainmakers on The Morning Voice here at 10:30, The Voice KVOI. Matt Neely behind the glass, keeping us honest and keeping those tunes going. We have had a jam-packed Monday already.
Wow.
In our first hour, we talked with Habitat for Humanity. We talked with Angel Charities for Children. Right now, we have in our studio Bruce Beichmann, who is here talking to us with Gospel Rescue Mission, and in a moment we're going to have Lisa Chastain join us as well. The reason that we're speaking with Gospel Rescue Mission, not only are they great partners, great community organization doing wonderful things for people around our community here in the greater Tucson area, but in particular, this week is National Homeless Week. And we want to bring attention to housing solutions and homing solutions and many of those things. Super wonderful initiative going on nationwide as well as here locally with Gospel Rescue Mission, and that is called Conversations on a Bench. Bruce, welcome. Thank you for being in studio with us this morning.
Well, good morning. Thank you. Thank you for having us. We really appreciate that. Yeah, it's an exciting week. Like you had said in the intro, it is National Homeless Week, and there's about 80 missions slash shelters from around the country starting this Thursday at 12 noon, the 9th.
Okay.
It's 24 hours. So, wow, I don't think I've ever sat on a bench for 24 hours.
And it's conversations going on that bench.
Conversations on a bench, that's right. So it's going to be very interesting. This will be our first time doing this. It'll be live, broadcasted live, with a full production. We can talk about that in a minute, but yeah, it's gonna be a lot of. It's just conversation, nothing to debate. We're just having conversations. City leaders, first responders, stakeholders here in the city, business owners. We get into the middle of the night. Literally, it's probably.
It's a little cooler these days, so
yeah,
that'll be nice. People
so
should
I,
wear a sweater.
There could be, they're very well, we could have homeless people sitting on the bench, and I invite them, we'll invite them to do that. So don't know what will be said. There could be some really raw conversation, but at the end of the day, that's what we want, right? We don't want to just talk to people that we see eye to eye with. We want all kinds of conversation. How can we come together and just talk about this crisis that our community is facing? And what are some solutions? How can we come together and work together?
And that's the key, is you can't solve something without first having the conversation. You have to be, or a theory that is taught, which I think makes a whole lot of sense in creating social change, is first you have to start with mindfulness. And that means being aware, not only of our own thoughts and biases, but really being truly intentional, mindful in what is happening around us and what we are attempting to tackle. And that then happens with dialogue. And dialogue does not necessarily mean getting everybody on the same page with the same thought. It means all this input. And then you get to assess what that is. And only after that can you even start to tackle that collaborative change.
Absolutely.
So it's a process. And without those conversations, it's not going to go anywhere. So how wonderful. I have been unfamiliar with this. I had not heard about it until I heard you all announcing that you were part of this. But this is a nationwide effort.
It is, yeah. So like I said earlier, there'll be, you know, we fellowship with about 350 other missions throughout the country on a national level.
Mm-hmm.
So there's about 80. This is the first time we've done this nationally. There were a couple missions that had started this a couple years ago, and they thought to share this with other group. Why don't we turn this into a national event? To make it even a greater awareness than just one mission in Fresno or somewhere else. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so
Fresno's a great community, by the way,
yeah.
and they have a lot that they're tackling and facing as well. I've got some great friends out there, and I just think it's wonderful to show that as different as all these communities are, whether it's Chicago, Fresno, Tucson, and other places, that there's some commonalities of challenges, and we might be able to actually help each other have ideas, and like you said, those conversations on a bench allow the people who are in the middle of the challenge also to have a voice, which is something really important to us here at the Morning Voice. That's the whole point about our show, is to bring up issues in a positive and solutions building way.
Right, 100%. And you know, look, we know what we're facing here in our own backyard in Tucson. But this is going on all across America, right?
It really is.
From coast to coast and everything, every place in between, you know, flyover mid-America. So this is a national crisis. The encampments, the drug crisis, it maybe hits home a little bit stronger here from a drug addiction standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. we're so close to the border and we know what that has brought as well. But, you know, and that's why we do what we do at Gospel Rescue Mission Tucson. You know, we're kind of a one-off what we do here in the nation with what we have and the resources we have. We're very blessed. to be able to provide a 12-month addiction recovery program, a housing program, a workforce training program. You know, it's a 9-acre campus. So
lots of opportunity to tackle several of the issues that are going on.
Yeah, it's all about total transformation there. And I think this awareness here, and this is going to be really wonderful to bring all of our you know, like I said, we're going to have city officials there. We're going to have first responders, stakeholders in the city. And and my counterpart here, our CEO, Lisa, can add to that a little bit more and talk about the live feed and everything. But it's just really exciting. This is going to be the first time we've done this here in Tucson. So
we're going to see how our community responds and how they get involved in the exchange of information. Bruce, thank you for that. And I know that we are going to have Lisa join us in just a second. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning.
For our listeners and our viewers, because we are on camera here with YouTube and Facebook, we've got Lisa Chessin, who's the CEO of Gospel Rescue Mission. And we've been speaking with Bruce for the last few minutes about the upcoming conversations on a bench. I was going to mention, though, before we run out of too much time, that you also are doing some great new things on your campus, including the Opportunity Cafe.
Yes.
So maybe tying in how the Opportunity Cafe plays out and how that actually, you might have some interesting conversations on the bench with a coffee in hand.
Exactly. Yeah, come have a conversation and have a coffee. So thank you for that. Yes, on Friday, we did a dedication and ribbon cutting for the Opportunity Coffee and Cafe. And that purpose is so much more than just a cafe and so much more than just coffee, that it's really helping people with hands-on training get the skill set that they need in order to get higher-paying jobs.
Right.
So for...
It all starts somewhere with skills and experience.
Right. And customer service and merchandising and inventory. So it really helps their build for any job that they're going to tackle, either working with us or working for others. So we've had kind of a robust workforce development since the inception. We have a partnership with Pima Community College, mm-hmm. and they do certification. We call it for rapid certification for higher paying jobs. And they're doing that in the areas of construction and culinary, logistics, CDL driver's license, and anything that becomes, you know, a popular interest of the people that we serve. So we're so grateful for that partnership. And then we partnered with Blessed Grounds Coffee to teach our people how to be baristas and about coffee. So it's been quite the journey. You know, we bought a food truck and converted it into a coffee truck about 8 months ago. And all of the interns have been trained on the coffee truck. Now they have this big, beautiful cafe. And so we're so excited, you know, about it, and so excited for the community to come and enjoy it. And we open to the public on October 20th.
That's wonderful. So that'll be right in line. I know that again, when things shift, new opportunities come up, and the plate tectonic shift of economic challenges lately, the cost of housing, the availability of housing, but also jobs, you know, various jobs. We've seen some of the larger stores and retail spaces, so Walgreens, you know, have been shutting down in certain places. We've got the Starbucks that have been shutting down in places, and many of those things are very confusing and surprising to folks. But when there's also then an opportunity of those same skills being just as wonderfully appropriate for the Opportunity Cafe, and to be in that space, it's the same skill set. So maybe you're not going to go get the job at Starbucks right away, because maybe they're having a hiring freeze, but other places would take those skills. So there's not an end in sight. It's a lot of skill building, retail training, working on a team, showing up to work, all those great things that people need, and they can be applied to other places.
Amen. Yeah, that's what we do, is we take people, we call it from homeless to wholeness. There's a lot of steps in between that.
Yeah.
But our goal obviously is to not just give them a helping hand, but really address the root issues of why they became homeless to begin with. And really, you know, have those treatments available to them, whether it be addiction, mental health, lack of employment, lack of housing, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But they're at the center of opportunity. You know, it's a house of solutions. You know, I often say, if there's somebody who wants to end homelessness in their life, there's no excuses there, because we really cover all those obstacles and those barriers from A to Z.
And wonderful. We were just speaking with Charlie Buchanan of Habitat for Humanity was on earlier, and we were talking about the collaborative nature also, that communication allows us to figure out maybe other partners that we didn't think were partners, or that we knew they did good work and you do good work, but maybe we didn't know that the timing is just perfect now to launch a new initiative or to find some way to ally as stakeholders. And that's always beneficial to the community at the end of the day.
We are all about partnerships. You know, we have over 50 different organizations working together at the campus of Center of Opportunity. And we're there saying, hey, we understand that the problem is bigger than, you know, what we can provide. So the only way we're going to see those numbers decline of those that are living on the streets is if we link arms, partner together, tackle the problems. You know, we're dealing with people. People are messy. You know, we're messy. It's not a you know, one size fits all.
No,
you know, I mean,
never.
People come to us and they are so, every single individual has their own story. Everybody has their own issues. So it's important for us that everybody is individually case managed so we can really help the individual hear what they're saying, hear the challenges that they're going through, and offer the help that they need.
Well, it has been wonderful to have you on this morning in Rainmakers. Seems like Monday, October 6th is a great Monday to be talking about a whole lot of things happening. October 9th, 24 hours, conversations on a bench, not only here in Tucson, but if you're listening from another community, take a peek on the website to see if maybe your community is having conversations on a bench.
Yes, you can visit us at grmtucson.com/bench. So get involved, and we'll have a live broadcast and a click for you to click on and join us virtually.
Wonderful. Not only to watch, but if people decide to just kind of come along, they can do that too. We're going to go to a commercial break, but Bruce and Lisa from Gospel Rescue Mission, thank you so much for coming and joining us on Rainmaker. We'd love to have you back afterwards and see how it went.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Listeners, stay tuned. Coming up next, we've got Lorenzo Sierra and his book, Fight Like Hell. We're going to be talking about love, politics, and the will to live. So stay tuned. You're listening to Rainmakers. We are back. It is 8:21. This is Lydia Aranda, your host for Rainmakers, because it's Monday, October 6th. It's been an exciting day here in the studios. We have had three organizations so far pop their way through our studios and speak with all of you as our listeners and viewers. And I'm excited for our next guest. He is Lorenzo Sierra, former Arizona representative in the House of Representatives and an author. I also have the privilege of calling him friend. Lorenzo, welcome to Rainmakers.
Thank you. Thank you, Lydia. Thank you very much for having me today.
We, among many things that we will talk about, are here to actually speak about the fact that you're an author. You are a published author. And for anyone listening and watching, Fight Like Hell, Love, Politics, and the Will to Live is your new book. And I have read this. It is a fabulous read. It is a easy read, but a deep read. There are lots of things that you share. You and Rhonda, who have been friends of mine for many, many years, you and I go back several years. And of course, if anyone doesn't know, Lorenzo, you are a Tucsonan, so you are back here in your digs. You've never really left them, to be clear, even though you've lived in other parts of the state and still do. You have always been fighting like hell for community, fighting like hell for your family, your constituents, and this is really a wonderful book that talks about what it is that drives us to do that. And you've got so many stories in here, so before we get into the nitty-gritty, I want to welcome you again to Rainmakers. Your career and your personal life have really made you a Rainmaker. No doubt about that. But I am curious to know, what drove you to become an author?
You know, Rhonda and I, we've been married since 2011. And gosh, we had been through so much in such a short amount of time. I mean, you look at just a few months after we got married, my mother was diagnosed and then soon died from what should have been a curable and survivable form of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we met, she was a widow. I was newly divorced. And we just had so much that happened to us. Then she was diagnosed with cancer. Then I went through COVID, election cycles, you know, so much. And at one point, we just said, we've got to capture this. And part of it was therapy. Part of it was, you know, there's so many Latino narratives right now in America, mm-hmm. and they're not reflective of who we are as a community. I see this as, you know, so right now our national leaders are blaming Latinos for things, and there are raids and there is fear. And I really, one of the things I wanted to do in addition to telling our story was capture the story of me growing up here in Tucson in a highly Latino community, graduating from Sunnyside High School, and telling the story of who we are as Latinos. We are hardworking. We are patriotic. We love our country. We love our family. And we love our community. And I wanted to make sure that that narrative got told as well.
And you're solutions builders. You're not just problem identifiers, but you are solution builders. And that is not only you and your makeup, but really in this story, I learned so much more about your father, about your mother, about your friends growing up. And despite the trials and tribulations that go on in life, I think all of us have friends who we remember coming through the trenches of preteens and junior high and high school and all these things, and then going off in different paths, but it doesn't change the lessons that we learned or the ways that we stood by each other as friends or family, and then the things that happen later in life and who you can count on. That was one of the things that I really pulled out of this book. I also, it really did show for me the focus on not just the challenge at hand, but what is it we can do about it, and that we could be a number of people. It might be you and your son. It might be you and Rhonda. It might be you and your constituents. I love the nunchuck group at the state legislature, and many other groups of people coming together that you found in different places and times of your life to tap into, and that you looked at things not only of what you could do to contribute to solving a problem, but you also didn't do it just so that you could be the only one. You knew that everything about this community, village, policy, whatever the case may be, is a team sport.
You know what, and I'm glad that you mentioned that we've known each other for a while, because we met each other as community servants, mm-hmm. and that has been, I am extremely blessed to have amazing people in my life. You being amongst my favorites. Gosh, how much have we been through?
Yes.
When you think about
20 years.
Yes, when you think about all the things that we were doing in the community to make the place make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, I still am in contact with so many people that I've known for decades that, I went to high school with, that I went to elementary school with. You know, Rhonda, when she was growing up, she moved quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so never really established that core group of friends like I did.
From early years. She definitely has them for the last 20 years.
Since we've known each other, mm-hmm. When we brought her into my world, which was, we're at all these community events, we're doing all the community things, and boy, people gravitated towards her instantly.
Yes.
And it was like, okay, there's Lorenzo and Rhonda, now here's Rhonda and Lorenzo. She is just an amazing human. And I think hopefully the book captures just how special of a person she is.
Oh, good. Gosh, it certainly does. And I think nobody could read this book and walk away with any other understanding than the dedication that you have to her and the appreciation that you have to her as a whole person. And the roles that each of you have played in each other's life to remind you of those things when the going was tough. And to really emphasize how much you are there for each other, but how much you also respect from whence you've come. And I don't just mean that only in your heritage or your family, but really those trials and tribulations and the battle scars that have come for those, and knowing that that is something that has really created each of you to dig in to your own natural strengths, but also to know that you have each other in your corner. Fight like hell is something that you do for each other and yourselves.
And that has been going on, gosh, for years. But, you know, specifically during her cancer battle, that was far more brutal than we would have thought, because we intellectually understood what we were getting into, or we thought we understood what we were getting into when Rhonda was diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very clinical, and we had our schedule, we had our agenda, this is how it's going to go, it's going to be, things are going to happen on these days and whatnot. And almost instantly, we found that it was not as easy as we thought it would be. In the very first aspect, or the first trials of this of her cancer, we found that she was impervious to the Kane line of medications, lidocaine, novocaine, the things that
all the canes weren't working on her.
Were not.
And you know what? We're going to take a really quick break. So let's let our listeners stay tuned so they can hear the answer to that story, because it's an interesting one.
Great. Thank you.
You're listening to Rainmakers. We're hearing some great songs by Yvonne Elliman, If I Can't Have You, which is a wonderful theme of the kind of things we've been talking about here in our studio today with Rainmakers. We are wrapping up a busy Monday, October 6th, with former Arizona House of Representatives, our state legislator, a good friend, Lorenzo Sierra, who is now an author of a fabulous book called Fight Like Hell, of Love, Politics, and the Will to Live. And right before we went to break, we were talking about one of the stories, one of the sections in the book talks about outliers and how Rhonda, your wife, Rhonda Cagle, really didn't know, but because of her diagnosis and then the treatments and the attentions to trying to cure her cancer and help her in that battle, she was faced with dilemmas and pain that could not be resolved with the normal medications that others do. She is one of those small percentage of people who metabolize pain meds, especially the canes, as they call it, the novocaines and all the canes, in ways that don't allow for pain relief. So she had to go through terrible biopsy and other procedures that were just debilitatingly painful.
Exactly. I remember when she was doing her biopsy into her left breast, the needles going in, and she felt every bit of it.
Oh gosh.
And the person doing that saying, "I just put enough of this medication, of this numbing agent to, you know, numb a rhino."
Right.
And
she's like, "I'm still here."
Felt every bit of it. So
that's so sad.
So what happened was, those are supposed to be like in and out, outpatient type services. So anytime there was a service like that, she needed to be under, which causes its own problems
as well. Its own dilemmas. First of all, you no longer are then just in and out. Secondly, your body, you know, really should only go under so many times. Otherwise, you start to be in unsafe territory, and the frequency that things like that had happened. So there was a whole lot, plus just the going under, coming back out, you know, all of that is so debilitating. I think one of the things that I liked that you voiced was not only the challenge of that, and of course the sadness we all feel, especially those of us who know Rhonda, to know that she had to go through that, but you were bringing attention to the fact that no matter how many times she raised her hand, spoke with her doctors, who were some of the most world-renowned, you know, very, very professionally, they were very accredited, very top of the rank, but they weren't listening to her. And that happens so much in healthcare, particularly with women, but I think it happens across the board, children or elderly, you know, folks sometimes do not get listened to and are just brushed aside as being too emotional or it's all in their head. We know our bodies, all of us, you know, I can't feel when you're pinched, but you can feel it. So if you say ow, it means ow.
Right. And for her, I mean, she is anyone who knows her, she is a strong, capable, very competent woman, doesn't complain. It is just someone who, you know, head down and gets her work done, and just a strong person. And in that healthcare setting, she just felt like she lost her agency, that she just wasn't believed, and things were going south very quickly. There was the pain that, you know, during chemo especially,
yes,
the pain, the nausea, that was just nonstop. I mean, just yesterday we were telling somebody there's a scene in the book where she's on some medication, and it again, it's she's an outlier because a small percentage of people end up with stroke-like symptoms mm-hmm. from this particular medication.
Oh, that's right.
And so I remember going up into the room, and she is like on pause, and she is
literally frozen in space right there.
Her eyes were terrified, but she couldn't speak, she couldn't move, and we just didn't know what to do. And then they found that this medication does that. But
you had to keep finding things out with trial and error.
Exactly. Gosh. And then in conversations that I have with women about the book and say it's like every woman I've talked to about this can say, yeah, there's been a time where I've been in the healthcare system and I didn't feel believed. I didn't feel heard. And hopefully, this book will inspire people to say, okay, you do have to speak up. Don't take no for an answer. Let them know what's going on with you and be that that brave person that we know you are.
Well, and they say that we are our own best advocates for our own health, and that we, just because there's respect for doctors and other practitioners in the areas that they're in, does not mean they are the only one. And we do have rights to get second and even third opinions, to change doctors, to change facilities. And even though it's driven often by whatever our insurance will make possible, we do have those rights. And if we don't do it, nobody will. So we need to feel confident in that. Music has played a big part of your life, Lorenzo, in a number of ways, celebratory and otherwise. But what really struck me in this book is how many times certain songs were really mantras. And in the time of the cancer, it seems that a Bonnie Raitt song in particular, I Will Not Be Broken, among other music, was very important to both of you and became a mantra, especially during those times of the medications and other things that maybe were creating fog. Seems like that was one of your phrases to bring both of you back to center.
Yeah, so there's a scene in the book, and this one was really difficult to write. It's still difficult to read.
It's very emotional. I got very emotional reading it.
So there's Rhonda was on a chemo called the Red Devil.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say the scientific name, but I know
it's probably about this long.
Yeah, and the chemo is known as the Red Devil.
Yeah. And because it's red in color for any of our listeners,
exactly.
And maybe some of our listeners and viewers are familiar with that from their own experience.
Anyone who's gone through that, this is like one of the most brutal forms of chemotherapy. And she, you talk about chemo brain, which is where, you sort of have a fog or just no memory of certain things. For Rhonda, there's a six-month period where she only can remember bits and pieces. And maybe that's good because I was taking her into chemo for, I think it was her fourth treatment, and she just begins sobbing uncontrollably. And I'm trying to give her a pep talk. You can do this, you know?
Her brain wasn't hearing that.
Right. And so we're walking her in, and all of a sudden she sees the facility and she starts to pull away from me and just starts screaming at me. And she's just terrified. But I know I have to get her in there.
Mm-hmm.
So earlier in the book, I talk about how she's a preacher's daughter.
Yes.
And her preacher's
very
daughter
good posture
has
and
to be perfect. So she was just screaming at me and just
resisting.
Terrified. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until she saw a cancer patient coming out the door that said hi to her, she suddenly became the preacher's daughter. I said, so the preacher's daughter cannot lose her composure in front of a stranger.
Oh, so did she pull it all together?
So she pulled it all together. Mm-hmm. And in that second, I was able to drag her into the chemo. And then later that night, she knew something bad had happened, but she couldn't remember. And I told her, I go, I am really hurt about what happened, some of the things that you've said. And so then what we did was we said, we need a mantra so that I can speak into your ear. You repeat it back. And we will hopefully get back to a place to where you're grounded. And it was, this is only temporary.
Yeah.
I will not be broken. And that was the name of the song that we were listening to over and over again. And on her last day of chemo, or on radiation, her last day of cancer treatment was the Bonnie Raitt concert in Phoenix. And so months before, I had sent a letter to Bonnie Raitt's people, and they go, okay, yeah, you're going to have backstage passes to meet Bonnie afterwards. And we're over the moon, and she, and Rhonda's like, at
and there's
that
a
point,
nice picture of that. Let me see if I can find it while you're speaking. Show it to our
and that's in chapter
folks.
10, I believe. And so, you know, we got the backstage passes, and Rhonda's over the moon. At that point, she couldn't, she didn't have very much stamina. You know, it was like I was in bed by 7, asleep by 8. So she was, you know, and this was going to be a late night. And not only did we meet Bonnie Raitt afterwards, who could not have been more gracious, she also dedicated a song from stage to Rhonda. It was Angel from Montgomery. And, you know, the stage awash in blue and just her delivery of the song. She changed some lyrics for Rhonda specifically in the song.
How nice. How very, very touching.
We were so encaptured by the moment, we can't remember the exact lyrics that she did, but music was such a part of this book. You know, throughout there are songs that are mentioned, and I mm-hmm. think, you know, especially
Sinos Verhan.
Yes, we'll talk a little bit about how I was on a ventilator near death on COVID, and my friend Cesar Chavez, who served in me with the House of Representatives, world class mariachi singer, mm-hmm. and doesn't do requests, never does requests. And here I am. I'm alive, and I get on a Zoom with them.
You had barely come out of being on the ventilator.
I had barely come out of it.
You decided to surprise them with your little bit of energy.
Yes, and so there I am, and I've got the masks on and everything, and they're all emotional. We had this phone call, and so this I go, you know what? If there was ever going to be a time for me to, I go, Cesar, I got to go, but will you sing Sinos Dejan for me? And he did it instantly.
Belted it out.
Yes, he did.
A cappella right there.
Yes.
Well, music, I think, is an inspiration to so many people, including our own Matt Neely behind the glass. He does find wonderful ways to bring us in and take us out. And we're getting ready, I think, for another commercial break. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. Listeners, stay tuned. We've got Lorenzo Sierra, author of Fight Like Hell, Love, Politics, and the Will to Live. It's going to be another lovely day. Bill Withers singing that wonderful song. Matt Neely behind the glass, thank you so much. We are wrapping up a fabulous Monday, October 6th, here in Tucson, live in studio at Rainmakers, The Morning Voice on KVOI, The Voice. We have former Arizona State Representative Lorenzo Sierra with us today. He is a local Tucsonan. He is doing fabulous things all across the state in his career, both in corporate America as well as being an entrepreneur himself. He and his wife each have consulting firms as well, and a public servant. So now you can add author with Fight Like Hell, the new book that has just come out recently that you've written, Lorenzo. Love, Politics, and the Will to Live really covers a whole lot in your personal and professional career and your journey together, individually, as well as together with your wife, Rhonda Cagle, and your kids. We have been talking a little bit about her struggle and the health disparities and the health inequities that were brought to light, even with people who, as fortunate as you, had great corporate-based insurance coverage, still had battles and being able to have to fight to be heard with your own health needs, hers and yours. And then you had a battle with COVID-19 that really, we almost lost you, and it was very scary back at the beginning. And you were back east in D.C. Trying to pay tribute to Ruth Bader Ginsburg and came down with COVID, and all of a sudden we were all pretty worried there for a minute.
Yeah, so I, you know, it wasn't just that we took a trip.
No.
During Rhonda's cancer, during the chemo, gave her advanced necrosis of mm-hmm. her hips, which means her hips had died. And basically, she was in excruciating pain. She could only take a couple hundred steps before things would just really get too painful.
She had a big surgery coming up.
Exactly. And so she had a surgery, but the surgery before, she had got a pulmonary embolism. So now it's like anytime she goes under, we don't know if she's coming out. Yeah. So before she did her hip surgeries, she said, we need to go see our daughter in Washington, D.C.
Spend some time just in case.
Just in case. And so we did everything that we needed to do, masks and, you know, social distancing, everything that mm-hmm. we needed to do. Ended up with COVID, and we were so worried about Rhonda. So she was the first one to get really sick, but she spent just half a day in the ER, and they said, you know, you don't have any lung issues. It's all in your stomach. You're fine, so why don't you get home? But you have to stay in D.C. for 2 weeks. Now mm-hmm. you have to quarantine here. Well, I kept getting worse and worse, and then,
And it was very serious.
It was very serious, and so, Amish Shaw, who was a friend of mine and running for Congress in the Phoenix area, said, you know, was asking me a couple of questions, and he said, yeah, you know what, go to the ER now. Like as serious as he could be, go to the ER now, you're probably going to get put on a ventilator.
And so at least you had the warning to, even as scary as that yes. might have been, it's sort of better to know than get there and have to figure it out. So at least you probably could hold some hands in the car, get there, and, right. and you know, the strong Rhonda that we all know
right.
Really kicked in. And she was your rock when you really
she
needed
sure
it.
She sure was. She had, so by the time we get there, I got so weak, I couldn't walk into the emergency room, so she wheeled me in. They recognized her, so they said, okay, you're okay. You can at least stay with him for a minute, because at that point, as folks know, if you were in the hospital,
no one could
stay in.
Yeah.
So she said, I don't remember this, but apparently I started crashing in the hallway, mm. and a bunch of people came in. And then, you know, they came in, and they did say, you know, we're going to put you on a ventilator. And I had like a two-minute FaceTime chat that we could do with that. And she goes, I need you to promise me something. I need you to promise that you're going to fight like hell to come back to me.
And you did.
And I did.
And you guys have been doing that before, during and since.
Yes.
And boy, are we glad, because we were all praying for you during that time. I remember when it just seemed like ages, and then we heard you were better, but we knew that the fight was going to be long, and we've had a lot of people. We've lost people in the community. We've had a lot of people down here, down south, who have fought the same way and been put on ventilators, and they didn't have quite as good outcome. You know, it took a right. long time, and they're still fighting the long COVID kind of outcomes. But you are communicating about many, many things in this book. You're communicating about relationships, confidence in self, being able to fight like hell for each other and fight for the things in the communities that you believe in to make sure that they are thriving. And that's what makes you such a great rainmaker. It's been such a pleasure to have you here. I want to make sure that people know that they can buy your book. They can also, you're going to be having some book signings all around right. the state, including here in Tucson. Looks like early November. Possibly November 6th. We're not real sure on the date yet, but we know it's going to be with Pima County Supervisor Cano is going to be one of your partners on that.
Yes, I can't thank the supervisor enough, but Supervisor Cano is putting together a book event, and we're just really excited. He is going to make a big announcement on that here in the very near future, so
great.
Stay tuned for that. And thank you, Supervisor Cano, and thank you, Lydia.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you on here. Everybody fight like hell, Lorenzo Sierra, and we will have you back soon.
Thank you so much.
Make it a great week.